From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Some of us plant a row of particular annuals with the intention to cut them for bouquets in their moment of bloom, and some of us think bigger and have a whole cutting garden within our landscape. I feel like today's guest, ceramic artist and passionate gardener Frances Palmer, thinks biggest of all, and that every plant in her extensive gardens, not just the tulips or zinnias or dahlias that you might expect, but even the herbs and her flowering vines and branches of ornamental trees and shrubs, are all fair game for having their moment in a vase someday at her place. Expanding your interpretation of the phrase cutting garden is our topic today, with plant ideas and tips for success. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Connecticut-based Frances Palmer is a well-known ceramist and gardener, author of the 2020 book Life in the Studio, Inspiration and Lessons on Creativity, and creator of a popular Instagram account, too. Her newest book is Life with Flowers, Inspiration and Lessons from the Garden, and I'm so glad to have her join me again today on the show. Hi, Frances. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. Thank you so much for inviting me to chat.
Yes. So before we get started, I'll say we'll have a book giveaway of the new book, Life with Flowers. So that was kind of fun. You did the previous book was in the studio, and now it's the one with flowers. And you write in the introduction to the new book about what you call this sort of symbiotic relationship between flowers and your ceramics. I love how you describe that. You say, I consider pottery and the flowers as two halves of my earthly paradise.
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, it really evolved over time. I started learning photography and growing the flowers for documenting my work. But as the years have gone by, the flowers are so essential to my whole world and psyche. And so I find them so important for making the work, and I'm always thinking about them when I'm sitting at the wheel.
Yeah. So in your garden, you have sort of, I think there's two primary parts. The original part was like a circular kind of enclosed fenced in area. And then you transitioned a tennis court into 30 raised beds, I believe. Is that what?
Yes.
Right.
So I have both gardens going simultaneously. And the round garden that has the same kind of rinky-dink fence that I put up over 30 years ago. We've had to replace some of the posts, but it's pretty much the same. So that functions primarily for the dahlias, and then around the perimeter inside the fence, I have some of the old roses and the peonies, and there's kind of a shade garden and lots of the annuals. And then the tennis court has really just gotten completely out of control with lots of roses, like, you know, the David Austin, the reblooming ones, mm-hmm. and a lot of natives have crept in, and then all the dahlias and a lot of perennials and a lot of annuals. So it's really, I call it my survival of the fittest garden.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about dahlias before on the show, and I'll give a link with the transcript of the show over on A Way to Garden to that conversation, because you have a method of growing them and supporting them and so forth, if people are interested in how you have so much success with those. But I have to confess to you that I rarely remember to cut bouquets of fresh flowers to bring indoors. You know, as long as I've been gardening and right. as many plants as I have, I'm one of those people who, you know, you come in my house and there's no fresh flowers in the house. I'm crazy about like seed pods and, you know, I have, you know, a whole bowl of like old dried green bean pods,
Right.
and tree peonies, the seed pod,
Oh,
the sort
yeah.
of star shape that they leave behind, and
Right.
all kinds of bits and bobs. And
Yeah.
I'm kind of one of those kind of people, although I will say one flower I do bring in every year right at the beginning of the season when I plant them is I love to have teeny little vases of pansies or
Oh,
violas.
yeah, that's so
It's
lovely.
like tiny, 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 and it's so
I
sweet. Like on the
know.
little windowsill, I'll line them up with
Yes.
just a couple of violas or pansies in each one.
Yes, I totally understand. Well, I mean, but bringing up the seed pods is a good point because I do try to, I mean, I love all phases of the flower. I love it when it's in its bud and of course when it's in its wonderful blooming stage, but also as it fades away, I think that all stages are equally beautiful.
Yeah, they really are. So, even earlier than I have the little pansies and so forth, I have a lot of hellebores, and I see you have them in the book. And I never really knew what was the best way to get them to last as cut flowers. Or do you condition them in some way? I see people float them in bowls of water, or just take the flower itself and do things like that.
Well,
But what do you do with them?
I mean, I think one of the great advantages if someone is able to grow their own flowers, and of course, the book isn't really specifically about that sort of person, but if you do grow them and cut them, I think they last so much longer. But if they do, sometimes they just wilt. You put them in a vase and
Yes.
they just bend over. But the best way is to just take them out of the vase and put them in a bucket, the entire flower, just submerge the whole stem plus the bud in cold water and let it. Sometimes people pierce the stems with a pin, but even
Oh.
if you just put the flower in a bucket and let it kind of resaturate, usually it comes back to life again. You shouldn't think just because it's wilted that you've lost them. They can be revived for sure.
And that's true with other things too, as well, not just
I mean,
hellebores.
it's kind of on a case, you know, it's a flower by flower thing. Every flower has its own eccentricities. And again, the benefit of living with them is you kind of, it's like people, everybody has their own style. And some flowers like their coffee and some prefer tea. You know, it just depends. So
Yeah, well, it's worth experimenting then, yeah.
definitely.
I had been reading your book, and so I was outside the other day in the garden. And like I said, I've just confessed that I don't bring flowers in a lot. But I was weeding in the vegetable beds, and I had some self-sown asparagus fronds, baby, like young asparagus plants that weren't making spears, but were just making those sort of frond things. And so I was yanking them out, and I looked at them. I thought, oh, these are kind of pretty, and then I noticed nearby there was I have a smoke bush, the one called Grace, that kind of has bronzy foliage, which I
Perfect.
love. And it had in a windy event the other night, I guess a little branch had cracked, not a big one, but a little piece. And I thought, oh, well, I'll prune that off, and maybe I'll try that too, because Francis tries things like
Totally.
that. So
Yeah.
I brought them in, and I put the two of them in the in a
And were
vase.
you so happy?
It's still there.
Yeah,
And
I
it's
know.
funny. It's really funny. So sometimes the oddest gleanings, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things in people's yards or properties that I'm sure that they don't really think about so much. And I try to use, especially like a smoke bush or even you know, because the asparagus frond, although it's got a very feathery leaf, the actual stems are quite stiff. So I like
Yes.
to use those in vases as the foundation, as opposed to using kind of more floral devices between, you know, chickenwort and all that stuff. I really try to avoid all of that in a vase and just use the material itself, because if you have a great stiff stem like the smoke bush or something, it's going to hold up the other flowers that come in afterwards.
And so, so speaking of like branches and so forth, it's not that you have a row of shrubs, your favorite shrubs for cutting, and you're like taking off all their branches every year or anything. You're just like, I had this little serendipitous moment where I saw this thing that needed to be pruned, and so I ended up utilizing it. You're doing this discreetly, I assume. You're not
Exactly,
maiming
because
your shrubbery.
no, I'm, especially for something like the witch hazel, that's one of the first things to bloom in the early months of after the winter time. These trees are often slow growing, so you don't want to take off major pieces. I try to be really careful. Like now I have that beautiful pink dogwood blooming, so I really think about how I'm cutting, because I want everything to keep growing and flowering. But
Right.
it's amazing. You can do it pretty easily if you take your time and look at the tree and think about how you could harvest from it and use it in a vase, but yet not do anything to the tree to keep it from blooming next year.
You had one arrangement in the book with a little bit of Japanese maple, a dissected leaf Japanese maple, and that was just like, oh my goodness, it was so beautiful.
I mean, I have that Japanese maple in the front yard, and so I always, again, I look at it, where can I cut? And then I've discovered over on the other side in my actually elderberry bush, there's a volunteer Japanese
Yes,
maple.
I have them
And
too.
now I'm like, oh yay, so where can I put that one? So I'm gonna dig that up this weekend and move it somewhere else. But the foliage of everything is really great to use, and often really lovely, and adds so much to the dimension of an arrangement.
So we'll talk about different foliage besides from branches of woody plants in a minute. But before we get off the subject of the woody plants, do you condition those stems? Like, are you a hammerer of the ends of the stems, or you don't hammer, or you slice them, or what do you do with me?
I'm really bad. I mean, if I cut the lilac, sometimes I'll cut the stem open so that the water can get in easily. But I'm pretty simple. I don't do a lot of conditioning of anything. I don't really condition the poppies. I kind of plunk everything in the vase, and it still seems to do okay. So I mean, I don't. Yeah, and the same thing with peonies. I just strip off the lower leaves of the peonies, just so that it allows more room in the vase. And that sort of thing. Same thing with cutting roses. I tend to strip off, but I'm not a lot of conditioning, no.
I see the same lists of quote cutting flowers everywhere. You know, if you do a search or you look in catalogs or whatever, what's recommended and but you seem to see, as we've been talking about, sort of see everything as a possible candidate, given the right vase and the right companions. And, it was fun to see, for instance, that you're growing gladiolus, which, years ago when I started gardening, everybody did, it was something that was you always had some of them. And they've sort of maybe been a little out of fashion. I don't know. I don't hear so much about them. And yet, you do sort of staggered plantings for successive harvests, don't you?
I think gladiolas are just such a joyful flower. Yes, I do that. And you can buy them online. They're not expensive bulbs, and they come, and you can, I you know, if you plant some every 2 weeks, they'll kind of keep blooming through the season. And theoretically, one could stake them so that they grow straight. Homegrown gladiolas are so vastly different from the commercially grown ones, and they just have this great sensibility in a vase. And they keep, if you pluck off the blossoms that have finished, then the new ones keep opening in the vase. And lots of times when I run out of time and I haven't staked them, then they get really wonky. I love that too, where the stems bend, and so they're kind of draping out of a vase. And I think they're just such a great flower to have, and it'll come back next year. So even though I do tend to add new bulbs, I can already see the old ones coming up in the garden.
How late could, if I was just getting started, how late? I mean, obviously, I would have started a little before now, putting in my first,
I
so.
think you can plant them now. I mean, in some places the frost date has just happened. So I would, definitely, and they're still available for sale. So I would definitely, you could do it now for sure.
I think in the book, you group them in with the what you call fantastic spires. Is that the right group?
Yes,
The sort
I
of,
yeah.
and to think about flowers by their sort of structure, their shape, their what they add, and in this case, a vertical element, a linear and vertical element to a potential arrangement.
Yes,
So there's
things
some
like
others that you highlight.
right, verbascum is one of them, hollyhock, delphinium, larkspur, all of these great, they have just wonderful color. And also, again, one of those stiff stems, that's a good support for some of the looser flowers. But if you're trying to get height in your arrangement, they're just, and I usually add them at the end, so I've got everything going, and then you just kind of stick them in at the end, and they have this great drama to them.
Yeah, definitely. Foxgloves, that's another one. Yeah, that would be comes to mind. That would be
Yes.
great. And yet I don't think about cutting it. Do you know what I mean? I mean,
I
yeah.
mean, I have foxgloves that volunteer those kind of deep fuchsia ones. I think there's a photo in the book, all over the property. And like, I just cut three of them yesterday. Sometimes I stand in front of them and I make myself cut them. You know, when something's so beautiful, I just make myself do it, as opposed to, because it's just me kind of sitting there looking at everything. And this way, if I've put it in something that I can photograph, I can look at all the time.
You also in the book you point out some sort of you have some pollinator plants, and I think you have some native plants as well. So it's not again just that sort of list, dahlias, zinnias,
Right.
tulips. It's not that list of peonies that's in the sort of classic interpretation of cutting flowers, is it?
Right. No. And especially in the autumn months, when everything is kind of reaching its crescendo, I find, like, I love those blue asters, which are native, and there's so many different shades of asters now.
Yes.
And the ageratums that are native, and they're just, of course, the goldenrods. And there's so many great native plants that can be incorporated with the annuals. And I just feel that it gives it kind of a new breath, rather than the more sort of, as you say, the classic list of annuals. It just sort of adds a lot of dimension.
Yeah. So sort of doubling back to foliage. I mean, I mean, I should have always thought about it, but I haven't ever really used ferns in an arrangement, and yet you have some beautiful examples of that in the book. Now, do they hold up? Do they
Oh
what's any
yeah.
tricks for that, or are they
I
just?
mean, I'm very bad at the trick thing, because I don't really do tricks, but
All
they
right,
do
so then they
hold
do
up.
hold up.
They
Yeah.
do hold up. Another great support system in the vase, which has such beautiful, and there's so many different kinds, are coleus. I just love planting coleus,
Yes.
and even though they are technically annuals, they're so easy to kind of cut at the end of the season and bring them in the house and root them in water and keep them as a house plant over the winter, if one has that, time and energy. But you can go to a plant nursery, and just coleus are fantastic for filling in those spots in the garden where there are holes, but then using the leaf in an arrangement is really fun.
What I love about them, besides those qualities of ease that you just and sort of cooperative nature that you just described, is that like a single leaf can kind of guide you to a palette. You know what I mean? If you don't have confidence in design, if you don't feel artistic or whatever, particularly, well, go get a coleus leaf and let it guide you to what else to put in there
That
because, yeah.
is a great, yes, that's a great thing to discuss, because it does, again, you can get the chartreuse or those kind of dark chocolate reds, and
Yes.
sometimes they have all those colors in the leaf, and that is a great guide.
Yeah. I learned the hard way just this last couple of weeks that because I got a lot of different coleus, had written a time story about a coleus breeder, and I had ordered some from some places that he recommended, and I was so excited about all these unusual coleus that I got. And I learned the hard way that woodchucks really like coleus.
Uh-oh.
Woody decided that there was a coleus buffet at Margaret's house.
Oh my goodness, that
And
sounds
Woody has, so Woody and I have parted ways. The local licensed trapper moved Woody down the road a piece
Oh, well,
the other day.
that's
So,
very
yeah,
good.
but he was very determined that all he would eat was coleus nonstop, basically.
And do you, did they revive or do you have to kind of
It's
send them?
funny, they do. Just as you said,
Yeah.
they're very willing to
I
resprout, so to
know.
speak. So even if
Yeah.
they're beheaded or whatever, or if a
Yeah,
leaf
and
is
if you, and
broken.
that's why they're great for cutting because you can take off, but you know, you can take off stems and they just keep going till frost. It's fantastic.
So maybe he was just trying to help me. Is that what you're saying? For
No, no, I don't,
the
you know, nature can be evil. There's a rabbit that lurks around my garden.
Oh, they're the worst.
Yeah.
They're so cute though, but they're really naughty when it
Sort
comes to, yeah,
of.
voracious. So other foliage. So you know, you use ferns. And again, you know, we all have some, and it's just like, wow, what it does to an arrangement is just breathtaking. And you just said coleus and you know, hosta leaves.
Well, I mean, clematis, you know, the leaf, the hyacinth bean, all those different vines, I use those as well. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, well, that was interesting too, because I wouldn't really necessarily think to cut a stem, you know, a piece of a vine, but drooping out of the cascading out of the arrangement, it gives it this whole other dimension. In the same way that, like, the fern as the backdrop, the sort of behind the arrangement is another element. They each have this architectural role as well.
I
So,
mean,
yeah.
another leaf that I love is amaranth, and you can get so many different kinds of amaranths. The leaves have great color. There's the stem is very sturdy, and then you have those beautiful colors of the flower that kind of drapes, if depending on which kind you've
Yes.
planted. But I mean, one of my favorites is hibiscus, which is that deep kind of ochre, big, thick. It has the flower head, and like I can literally see the birds sitting on the amaranth, and it's their bird feeder all summer long.
Interesting. Huh. I have hardly ever grown the amaranth, so that's a good tip. Hot biscuits, huh?
Yeah, I love hibiscus. That's a great
Okay.
one. Very sturdy.
And then it was a perennial, big perennial, the yellow waxbells, Coringa shoma
Oh
palmata,
yeah.
that, you know, has some of the most unusual leaves of any perennial I've ever grown. It's kind of a shady perennial.
Yes.
And so really unusual leaves seem to attract your attention.
Definitely. And what I the yellow waxbells start the actual flower comes right around the same time as the dahlia, so that kind of deep, and also that particular plant in my garden was given to me by a friend. So I have like enormous attachment to it. So every year when it comes back, it just makes me so happy, and that it's just sitting there. And I love the leaves are great to use, and the flowers when they come. But as you know, when you've traded plants with friends, and it has a whole different dimension than when you go and you buy it from a nursery.
Well, in the last maybe 3 or 4 minutes, I wanted to just say, you know, speaking of buying things from nurseries, the bulb catalogs are already starting to arrive
I
for fall
know.
planted bulbs. I mean, we haven't even officially barely reached
Right.
summer. So, and there's a lot of bulbs in your book, you know, and that you cut from. I just wanted to sort of say, are there any that you know, ones that we should think about adding? I added a lot of little guys this last fall. I thought, okay, you know, I can do that. It's not a big project. And, you know, at the foreground of beds and so forth. And some
Right.
of them, just like my little thing with tiny vases of pansies, you know, that there's
Yes.
nothing like in early spring, there's nothing like having tiny little charming
Like
creatures.
muscari. Yes. And also you can get some quite small, delicate daffodils, which are great because the animals won't eat the daffodils, so you can really plant those anywhere. And they do have some of those early cyclamen. No, not cyclamen, early narcissus. Is that the word I'm looking for? I'm
Those
so
are the
glad.
daffodils, but
Yeah, the like the beautiful little yellow ones.
Oh, the cyclamenius type, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's a word like cyclamen, but it's
Okay.
yeah, I
I know.
know.
I
Yeah, it's
don't
one
have
of
it right in front of me. I can only see it. I can't
I know it's
name
not a
it.
word we use a lot.
But yeah, the muscari. Also, you can get those beautiful, delicate rock iris are great.
Oh, yes.
And of course, the hellebores will be early, but the bulbs, I just, oh, their species tulips are so, they have a much more delicate stem than, but they're not as early bloomers, the species, but they are beautiful in smaller vases.
Yeah.
The Fritillaria, the checkerboard one, the Meleagris,
Meleagris, yeah.
beautiful one for a small vase.
Okay, so those are some possibilities. So you sounds like you're also on the small ones are what are attracting me right now. Maybe it's because I have a lot of larger things already in the garden and the areas at the perimeter. It's a
Well,
great place to put something.
what I love about those small ones is if you have them, you can really contemplate them, rather than I mean,
Yes.
as wonderful as the big arrangements are, for me, sometimes by my wheel, I'll just put, just like what you're saying, a small vase with just a few of these really treasures that you think, oh my gosh, they actually came out of the ground, and you can sit with them, and that to me is really, really special.
Well, it's been good to talk to you again. And what you just sort of evoked for me was another line in the book where you say, "Together, the unyielding clay and the flowering plants, each fragile and temperamental, form a bond." and that's exactly it. It's almost like the yin and the yang. You know what I mean? The
Yes.
two
Yeah.
qualities. Yeah. Well, it's good to talk to you. And as I said, we'll have with the transcript of the show over on A Way to Garden. We'll have a giveaway of your newest book, Life with Flowers, and it's just good to speak. So happy gardening season, Frances. I hope all goes well over there, and that you don't have too many rabbits.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you again for inviting me. It's always a treat to talk to you. Thank you so
I'll
much.
talk to you soon again. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening and cutting flowers meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of AwayToGarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.